This episode of A Few Things with Claire and Erica has been brought to you by Cider Week NYC. For more information, check out ciderweeknyc.com.
This is Chef Emily Peterson, host of Sharp and Hot. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to A Few Things with Claire and Erica. This is our podcast. It's based on our newsletter, All the Media.
All the Media. You can sign up for our newsletter at ofakind.com, where we also sell the pieces and tell the stories of emerging designers in the fashion and home space. There's a lot happening.
I think we sell really beautiful things, if I do say so myself. And Completely. We tell really beautiful
Claire,
stories.
I agree.
Great. I'm glad we're on the same page about totally. This. On this podcast, we talk about all the things that we love, which is what we do on a normal daily basis anyway. So now we're just doing it with headphones and a
now
mic.
Now you get to listen.
Yeah.
So something we wanted to talk about that people don't talk about enough are candles.
People don't talk about candles nearly enough.
Not nearly enough. It's a huge problem.
Can I tell you that? I don't know. Me. Maybe this is probably illegal to say, but I'm going to say
illegal.
It anyway.
Okay.
It's probably violating some contract. We did a partnership with Target way back when in the day. And one of the things we learned is that Target has multiple just candle buyers. Just their whole job is buying candles for Target.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Like, those people are definitely talking about candles enough.
Do you think that those people have to keep the coffee beans in their bag to like refresh their noses all the time? Just like the way you keep almonds in your purse for
if
snacking.
Not, I hope they're if not, I hope they're listening and that they're going to do
and
it
that
now.
They're like, but that feels like a pro tip.
That actually begs a much more important question, which is how can one be objective about smells when you're a candle buyer? Because some candles are just going to smell like crap to you, and you're going to be like, you know what? Everybody loves a different smell, so I'm going to have to buy this.
I don't even know how you gauge scent taste in that way. But we're just going to tell you about the scents we like, and you're going to have to go smell them for yourself.
Let's do it.
Okay, so my favorite nice but not crazy expensive candle, the one that I have noted, it is noted as so well-priced, so chic in our notes, are the Maison Louis Marie candles. They are like $35, but they look like $100.
And they smell like $100.
They smell like $100.
Because you know, if you're a scent person, that some things just smell kind of cheaper. And I think, and I actually...
That smells cheap.
And Maison Louis Marie smells like a really expensive, high-class scent. And I actually think that...
It has that like Le Labo thing going
totally.
On, where it has very, very... various notes. There's always like sort of a woody one. Mm-hmm. Nothing smells aggressively floral or sweet. There's not that sweetness.
Exactly. It doesn't smell tacky like a gas station bathroom. And I actually think that this is like why part of the reason Mrs. Meyers has had so much success, because it's supermarket pricing, but it doesn't smell cheap and trashy, which is, I don't know why no one else has been able to nail this, but Mrs. Meyers does really great candles, and they're, you know, cute, packaged in little jars, and
they're,
you
know, just like very simply designed. They're not going for anything more than that, which is smart.
They smell awesome. I feel like that's probably the third time that we have talked about Mrs. Meyers on the show.
Yeah.
So call us if you want to sell. We want to sell you an ad. We're in. We recently learned about these other scented candles that are not actually candles.
Oh, the Luminaras.
Yeah.
Luminaras are, so they basically are candles that don't have a flame. You don't light them. They're like a fake candle.
But they're way better than the fake candles that you're picturing. They legit look like real candles. Apparently, a lot of
people... The flame looks like it flickers.
It does. It's like moving. You would have no idea that it's fake. And I'm not necessarily... I think for events, it's really perfect. Like if you are trying to put candles inside paper bags or near flowers or whatever, where you feel like it's going to be a hazard.
The potential might actually catch.
They're apparently also making scented versions of these fake candles, which is a whole other thing.
That is a whole other thing. So the mid-range candle, just to step back one step between the Maison Louis Marie and the Mrs. Meyers.
What falls in between
For me are the Volume Spa candles, which are about $18 for the sort of big, substantial, multi-wick situation. The nice thing is you can buy them kind of all over the place. I know Anthropologie sells them. They're available on Amazon. They're very accessible. So the Maison Louis Marie ones, you know, you have to buy from their website or hunt down at Stephen Allen or something like that.
Question for you. When do you light scented candles?
When do I light scented candles? In the evenings.
After
dinner. After dinner. Sometimes on like a weekend afternoon. I don't know. Like not when food's cooking.
So this is my thing. Most of the time I'm home, I'm
cooking
or eating. And so I don't end up lighting candles that often unless I come home and something smells bad. And it's like, well, got to get the smell out.
It's a fix.
I have started lighting a candle in the bathroom while I've been getting ready. And let me tell you, it's luxurious.
That is luxury.
Yeah. So I remember growing up, I remember my friend Alex Capano's mom used to do this. And I remember being like, that's so classy. And I don't know why recently I was reminded of this moment. And I was like, I'm going to start doing this. And it just makes my getting ready ritual feel like I'm at a spa and like it's more of a ritual. And it's lovely. So that's when I've started lighting my scented candles. Because I don't know when else. At the end of dinner when it still smells like, I don't know, pasta or whatever. Right. It feels weird to mix gardenia with the pasta smell.
Yeah, that's fair. No, yeah, I guess we just do it after dinner. I don't know. I was never allowed to have candles when I was growing up. Yeah, I didn't imagine that you were.
I was definitely not allowed to have candles.
So I wasn't allowed to have anything lit, you know, for obviously house burning down reasons, or anything scented because my mom reacts really poorly to fragrance.
Same.
So it feels very adult to be able to have a scented candle. Like
this feels like the most reckless thing.
Yes, super reckless. Yeah.
Okay. moving on from not scented candles, this other thing that feels like similar to lighting a scented candle in the morning while I'm getting ready, lighting candles on the dinner table while Chris and I are eating has totally changed the game up for me.
Oh,
it's like,
yeah.
The candle is lit. That signifies we are eating. The cell phones are gone. It's
100%.
Kind of like we're in a
restaurant. We light a candle at dinner too.
I definitely didn't do it growing up, and it feels quite dramatic, but that kind of works because especially in a New York apartment when your kitchen is also your dining room is also your living room, it feels like you're saying like this little space that is lit by the glow of the candle is now where we eat, and this is a ceremony.
Because neither of us also have like a dining room that you walk into or anything like that. I have one of those really beautiful little hay candle holders that it has the handle and it's just sort of the single candle. And yeah, it does feel very like grown up and serious at our tiny little kitchen table.
I got this cue from our friends Jamie and Kevin, who we end up talking about all the time, and they've been on the show. They lived and worked in the same space. So they had their photography studio in their home. And they told me that the way that they signified that the workday had ended and that they were now in their home and no longer working was by lighting a bunch of candles because it changed the vibe of the room so much. And I was like, that makes so much sense. That's really smart.
Two other sort of candle related tricks. So if you are going to spend money on a candle, you want to make this thing last. So there's this whole guide that we will link to. But basically the first time you light it, you're not supposed to trim the wick, and then you're supposed to let it burn down a certain amount so that it you're trying to prevent tunneling. This is a very specific term, you guys. But you know
what? It definitely just makes me think of your wrist. Like this is a carpal tunnel issue.
No, but okay. When I say it, you will know what I'm talking about. When you have a candle and you light it and the middle gets really small and there's wax up the sides. That's apparently.
And you can no longer light it.
Correct. Yeah. That's tunneling. We want to avoid that in a big way.
Yeah.
So you want to like basically burn it long enough so that the entire top is liquid wax so it all starts melting down. And then every other time you're supposed to trim the wick. So we will link to this guide. It's very helpful if you are spending like $40 on a candle and you're like, Jesus, did I burn through that in a weekend?
Yes.
Correct. And then also, if you care about the sort of air purifying quality of these things, beeswax is the answer. Apparently, they clean the air.
Beeswax candles.
Yeah, which soy and paraffin candles do not do. So
and trashy they, and soy and paraffin candles.
Yeah.
Who's burning those anyway?
Rude. But I also think that the wrapped beeswax candles are
such
a pretty like, vibe.
I got Hanukkah candles actually recently at Bed Bath & Beyond Holler. Yep. They had beautiful beeswax Hanukkah candles for your menorah that were all different colors.
And for your menorah. Like, for something else.
Listen, I'm not a very...
Showing off over here.
showing off what a lazy Jew I am that I'm like, I don't know. You might use Hanukkah candles for something
For birthdays.
Else.
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah. Yes. So these are, oh my God, wait, this is begging me to tell my other candle story. But yes, they're beautiful beeswax Hanukkah candles. Go get them. We'll link to them on the site. The other Jewish candle thing that happened to me recently is that there was a natural disaster coming to New York. I think it was a hurricane.
It was like one of the hurricanes. Yeah.
And I lose my mind when these things happen. And I just always am like, that's it. We need all the batteries, all the extra light bulbs, all the candles.
And all the eggs. You buy like 3 dozen eggs, which is not a normal reaction.
Because that's something you can eat for every meal.
But you can't refrigerate. Anyway, it doesn't. It's not a canned good. It doesn't last forever.
Fair. I do go nuts for the natural disasters. And for whatever reason, the last time this happened, I discovered Shabbat candles at our local bodega, which I guess are...
This was a discovery.
This was a discovery. Yeah. I should have put in 10 things. They're called... They're dual marketed as both emergency candles and Shabbat candles for people who don't... for Jews who don't use electricity during Shabbat. And they sell them in like... 72 packs.
Yeah.
And I got like 4 of them because I was like, this is great. If the power of the 72 packs. 72. Mm-hmm. Wow, my husband was pissed when he came home. He was like, what are we ever going to do with these? But they're amazing because they are slow burning. They do not need any sort of a stand because they're emergency candles. They're like, they look like,
they're like mini pillar candles.
Exactly.
Yeah, they're like half size.
And listen, if I do say so myself, they're not bad looking. They're pretty minimalist. I think that we could probably use them.
They have a certain like Scandinavian design vibe happening.
Agreed. So if you're in the market, your local bodega might have these Shabbat / emergency candles.
On that note, we're going to go to commercial and it's going to get much more interesting around here.
Yeah. Bye. Wah, wah, wah. Wah, wah, wah.
Cider Week helps to bring profitability to local orchards while reviving heirloom apple varieties by cultivating awareness of craft cider. Cider Week connects cider makers from New York State and select pioneering guest cideries outside the state to buyers from top restaurants, bars, and retail shops across New York City. Those culinary tastemakers, in turn, help increase consumer awareness of cider's pleasures by hosting public events, tastings, dinners, classes, and pairings that build appreciation and demand for regional ciders.
Hi, this is Dave Arnold from Cooking Issues, and I'm here to talk to you about the Museum of Food and Drink, which is finally getting a brick-and-mortar space right here in Brooklyn, New York. So the Museum of Food and Drink is opening the MOFAD Lab, our first laboratory and gallery space, where we will be putting on an exhibition called Making It or Faking It, the History of the Flavor Industry. And it tackles a very important topic, which is how the food system got to be the way it is now as a result of the intervention of the flavor industry, how that happened. Get your tickets at tickets.mofad.org to come see the first exhibit ever of the Museum of Food and Drink at the MOFAD Lab, brought to you by Infinity on 62 Bayard Street.
Hello, we're back. You're still listening to A Few Things with Claire and Erica. Hopefully you're still listening anyway.
Well, if you're here, you are. Yeah.
And we are back with Sloane Crosley, who I just feel so honored to have on the show because I was reading her stuff long before I ever met her. So it's a hero moment.
Completely. Sloane just released her debut novel, The Clasp, which got a rave New York Times review and has had like a crazy following. Yeah. But you probably also know her essay collections, I Was Told There'd Be Cake and How'd You Get This Number? Yeah. So Sloane.
Hi. Sloane's really impressed by our introduction. She's like, you guys know me.
And she's like, you know all the words.
Well, I wasn't sure if I should interrupt because I thought there were more nice things coming. So I was like, I want to say thank you, but only once. Thank you.
Hey,
that was lovely. I'm happy to be here.
thank you, Sloane. Before we talk about books and writing novels and that tiny little thing.
Tiny.
No big deal. Let's talk about your thoughts on candles quickly.
One of my essays in I think it's in I Was Told There'd Be Cake, is about how my parents had this like incredible suburban fear of the house burning down and we weren't allowed to have candles. They were like this, you know.
I think I remember that.
Yeah, really there was like a whole bit about
it. Felt like one of
Hanukkah candles, actually. That was really the only time that
there was burning
crazy.
Things in the house.
Yeah, or when you're lighting like a yard site candle, which is a candle you light on the anniversary of someone's death, I believe. Oh. So it was either, there was just a bummer.
It was solemn. It was a solemn thing.
Yeah, the yard site candles are very rarely actually, like mango and mandarin. It depends on the life of the person,
not sold at Bath and Body Works.
Yeah, they're not, although they should be. But we were just talking about this in the break about how when you light the candles, I'm completely going to ape your idea or steal it about lighting them in the bathroom as part of a ritual of getting ready. Because I also do all my bathroom stuff too fast anyway.
Yeah. You know,
I mean, it's
enjoy
like
it.
If I don't,
it feels like you're checking it off a list.
Yeah. And I don't really do anything. I have all this makeup. I don't do anything with it. So I feel like it would inspire me. I've been on book tour and I had a couple of different friends stay, and a friend who I really adore. And I actually, I don't know if I should say this on the podcast. I don't think she's listening, only because she was so concerned about doing a good job. And she had never hung out and stayed in my place before or watched my cat. And she, you know, kept sending me all these texts like, did I do good? And I said, yes.
Because I house guest.
Yeah, it was really, really sweet for her to even be so concerned. And like, everything's great. Like, better than she left it, you know, that what you were supposed to do, what your mother
totally.
Told you to do. Except I had a diptyque candle.
Which is like $1 million.
Yeah. Like
you had $1 million sitting in
your
apartment.
I had $1 million worth of wax.
In a
because
beautiful
that's
glass
what,
jar.
That's what I do with my book advance. Yeah. But I use it very judiciously because of the aforementioned book advance. And so I had it and I maybe lit it once, probably incorrectly.
Yeah.
I'm sure
you
it was
probably
like a,
totally
it was
screwed that up.
Tunneling nightmare. But still I came back and there's like, I mean, you can't see because we're on the radio, but there's like a quarter of an inch left and like the sides of the glass are black.
Wow.
And she just really, she must have fallen asleep even.
Do you know why she did that? Because she was so concerned about leaving your apartment smelling better than she arrived
right.
in it.
Which honestly is a trick you're not going to achieve either way.
I mentioned
I have a cat, so it's not really... I mean, it's not in the cards for you either way. But I was sort of like, I couldn't. She was so excited about doing a good job that
you couldn't mention it. You couldn't be like, I'll send you the bill.
I wasn't
going to
mention it either way. Yeah. You know what vengeance can you exact? I'm just going to sleep over her house and you know flush her toilet a lot and like break an antique hair clip. Like,
amazing.
Right.
So speaking of antique hair clips,
yeah. Well, you're talking about being at home and lighting candles. Do you write from home?
I do.
Okay.
You know, I tend to write big chunks somewhere else.
Okay.
So I've gone, I have really nice friends who will house me for, weeks at a time or like sort of miniature writer's retreats in Sonoma, New Orleans, and Hudson.
Wow.
Those are all lovely places to go.
Lovely. Although I purposely
nice
go
work.
When they're not lovely.
Oh.
Because I like to be kept in the house and not distracted.
Yeah,
so I go
to
Hudson in January where you cannot leave the house.
Ms.
Seriously.
And I went to New Orleans in August.
Wow.
Where you cannot leave the house.
Yeah.
Sonoma, I just sort of went. Sonoma's perfect.
There's no time of year in Sonoma.
No, there's no not
How
nice
How long
time.
Do you go for?
I'll go for 2 weeks or so. I mean, it's one of these things where I have deadlines here and I still, I worked at Random House before I started writing full time and published the first two books while I was there.
Okay.
And so that was 10 years or about 10 years, a little less there. And then I worked at HarperCollins before that. And a literary agency before that. And I'm like a nice girl with a 401k, you know?
Right.
And so it's still hard for me to wrap my head around the idea that I could leave for like 6 months.
Yes. How did you make the decision to leave and do that? Because that is scary.
Yeah.
I mean, it's something we went through for sure with starting
to leave my job.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely had that whole like, I'm a nice girl with a 401k thing too.
I hope that's
like,
the poll quote for this episode. I'm a nice girl with a 401k.
How did you convince yourself that that was a decision you could make?
I think I feel like it's like a leapfrog, like a lily pad thing where you're sort of, you suss out the new lily pad and you're like, can that hold my weight?
Yeah.
And so, and then you jump.
What a beautiful writerly way of putting it.
Thank you. Even though I just call myself fat.
Exactly.
Yes. Before we and get, an amphibian.
Before we get too deep into it, yes. Can you explain the synopsis of the book?
Yes, yeah. That would be great. Thank you for asking. Sure. I have been talking about it so much that I forget to do that, and we'll talk about Wix for a really long time. Okay, so the novel is essentially a love triangle, and it's sort of inspired by the love triangles that you see in novels and movies of the 40s and 50s, you know, mm-hmm. Philadelphia Story, that kind of madcap love triangle. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, particularly fraught. But then it's about it's told from three different perspectives. And the love triangle consists of Victor, Nathaniel, and Kezia. So mm-hmm. two guys and a girl. They all went to college together. They reunite at a wedding where they've had sort of, you know, some interaction with each other 10 years later. They're basically practically not talking to each other. And then Victor, who's the sort of sad sap of the group, falls asleep drunk on the mother of the groom's bed during the ceremony. And she wakes him up and tells him this sort of crazy, possibly true story about a missing necklace that went missing during the Nazi occupation of France. So at that moment, it sort of switches from being just a comedy of manners, which mm-hmm. is fun to write and hopefully fun to read. And then I sort of put wheels on it, I guess. And so he decides, Victor, to go after this necklace because he becomes convinced that it's the necklace that Guy de Maupassant based his famous short story, right. The Necklace, after. And then the other two sort of follow him in hot pursuit. And so the latter half of the book takes place in Normandy, and it's called The Clasp. Both because of the callback with the necklace, mm-hmm. right. obviously. And then, of course, as cheesy as it is mm-hmm. true, that question of who do you hold on to, what's mm-hmm. real, what's yep. keeping this all together.
So my big question while I was reading this, knowing you so well, and it was just like the amount of technical detail in this book and historical facts and how necklaces are made and how jewelers behave was insane. Like, how much research did you do for this, and how did you go about doing it?
That is a little bit. Did a little bit.
Just a tiny bit.
Well, I mean, because in a way, I'm glad you asked me about the work stuff, too, because I think a question that a lot of authors and now myself get asked is, oh, do you feel comfortable writing from the male's the man's mm-hmm. perspective? And they're two very different men that are narrating.
Yeah, totally.
You know, and I'm thinking, that's not hard. I live in the world. I know a couple of them.
Right. Yeah. You interact with these people.
I interact with these people. And in fact, it's quite heartening when you tell me I got it right, because it means, you know, men, they're just like us.
Oh, my gosh. You got it like uncomfortably right at points where I was like, oh, this is too familiar. It was.
I know this guy.
In certain ways, I said to Eric, it was like a little bit like Rachel's Getting Married, where you're like, oh my God, this is so familiar. And I kind of like, it almost
cringy close.
Invokes a certain amount of self-loathing where you're like, oh my God, that's me or that's my friend. And
nobody likes to be pegged. I'll answer your question about the research, but I will say that one of my joke is always with friends that the worst thing you can say to somebody is you would.
Right. So,
you know, I think I'm going to get this sweater. You would. I'm going to go to the bathroom. You would. I mean, and suddenly, their back is up.
Right.
Anyway, so for the research, they have three different professions, mm-hmm. none of which I've officially held. Right. One somewhat, which is one of them is a screenwriter in mm-hmm. LA. One of them has just been fired from the internet's seventh largest search engine. and he's been fired for incompetence. So my ignorance really worked in my favor. I didn't have to do much research because I would be fired from a search engine.
Right.
But she was tricky. So Kezia works for an independent jewelry designer mm-hmm. in the meatpacking district. And she's come from a sort of larger, big, either Cartier, Tiffany-like mm-hmm. company. Mm-hmm. So the parts that are about fine jewelry, mm-hmm. You can do that with research. I went to the New York Public Library. I went to every jewelry exhibition I could find.
Wow.
Like there was a Van Cleef exhibit at the Frick. I snuck into a Sotheby's auction, all that stuff.
And were you looking for inspiration or were you fact checking?
I was looking for inspiration and just trying to absorb the world. And even that, though, was background. That was mm-hmm. where she had come from.
Right.
Barely in the book. It's amazing.
I was going to say, that's a lot of work for
something. It's a lot of work for something
briefly.
Very brief.
Yeah.
The actual problem in the mm-hmm. book with this necklace that she has, so she works in jewelry design, mm-hmm. is that the clasp on it. The necklace is too heavy. It's mm-hmm. these big sort of heinous rock crystal things. She works with this eccentric designer that makes like stuff out of petrified rat teeth that she would never sell an of a kind.
Never.
But I will petrified rat teeth.
That was kind of what made, I mean, like, that part of the book was really fun.
Felt very close.
For you guys.
Me to read for sure, just because it was about independent design and also just the silliness of being like, oh, this necklace is so beautiful. And then you send it out and every customer writes back and is like, I wore it 6 times and it fell off, which never happens at of a kind.
Of course.
But you can imagine.
But
I could conceive.
I could conceive. And same with the way you described, like, what is the environment of a small jewelry designer and who works for her and what is her
well purview. A lot of that, well, I should say the some of the stuff came from me asking friends. Mm-hmm. I have a friend who works for, I'm gonna butcher her name, which is terrible because mm-hmm. I'm a big fan of her jewelry. Mm-hmm. Monique Pian.
Mm-hmm. Pian.
I have a friend who works for her and her stuff is much nicer than Rachel beautiful. Simone's in the book. Yeah. Cut off a pinky, maybe someone else's, but anyway. So and then also a really dear friend of mine, Lisa Salzer, who runs Lulu Frost,
who we've worked with on of a kind.
Oh, great.
Is beautiful.
She's amazing. Yeah. And she actually made, we got into it together because not only did she fact check and would say things like, you wouldn't say purchase orders, you would say POs, these things that I just wouldn't know. And then you have to be judicious and think, well, not everybody who reads this book,
in fact,
most people are not going to get that. So even though some things are probably wrong, you know, even though she told me this is incorrect, I kept it anyway because it made sense for the narrative.
Mm-hmm. That's so interesting.
But she actually made, this necklace that Victor is convinced is real, I describe in detail several times in the book. Mm-hmm. And Lisa actually made, just to shill a little bit for a second, for something beyond my book, Lisa made a necklace based on the necklace I describe in the book that she's selling on the website.
So I love it.
And it's called the Kezia necklace.
That's awesome.
So I'm very
so
excited.
Smart.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's a little, she's very good at making sparkly things that you can wear in normal times.
Oh, 100%. Sure. Yeah, that you can wear with like a t-shirt. Right. And
I would say
and, like,
that's the perfect description of Lulu Frost.
Sparkly things in normal times.
Exactly.
Go ahead.
When you're doing research, are you doing that all on the front end? How are you thinking about that and integrating that into your writing process?
Well, it really starts with the characters.
Yeah.
I mean, it started with the characters and what they would do. And then I believe in books about work, about jobs. I mean, the idea of, you know, no one has a job in a lot of books as much as no one has a job in a lot of TV shows.
Yes,
exactly.
Totally.
And I think there is drama there and it's how we live. And so their character descriptions were very informed by their career history.
Yeah.
And what they wanted was also tied up in it. And these are three people, just to layer on the whole fake, you know, what's real, what's not thing, that are very concerned with their impression that they're giving to each other.
Yeah.
You know, you want to impress your old college friends and make them think you did really well. And so part of their motivations personally are tied up with their professional motivations.
Right.
So I knew that I wanted Nathaniel to be a guy who was lying about his success as a screenwriter, you know, and had all these quote things in development. And I knew that I wanted Victor not to tell anyone he'd been fired.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you know, so those are personal motivations so the professional, I guess it just got naturally woven in is the answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
That makes sense.
Are there any other books you like that are about work and about jobs?
Oh, wow. And then we came to the end.
Yeah.
Yes.
Such a good one. Let's see. Straight Man, although that's really about academia, but by Rick Russo.
It's really good. Yeah.
Ed Park published a really good one called Personal Days.
I don't know that either. This is good.
I'm trying to think what else. I mean, there's the classic, and this is in some ways what I was trying to avoid with this depiction of my heroine Kezia and her boss Rachel Simone. Because Rachel is eccentric and because this is New York, there's like an instant Devil Wears Prada bucket.
Yeah.
But I was trying to avoid it because almost, I mean, Kezia is the one with the institutional knowledge is really relied upon. So it's not quite that. But that is a, I think what we think
that's
of.
That's like a trope.
What's a hellish workbook? Yeah, right. Okay, that one.
Yeah.
Why? So what? You have been known for a while now, or at least as long as I've known about you, as a really amazing, one of the best sort of personal essayists.
Thank you.
And you're welcome. And you are so hilarious, and you do it in your books, and you do it in The New Yorker, and then in The New York Times. And I have seen you, you know, in the lead up to the publication of The Clasp and Around It, just have so much pride and meaning focused on getting your first novel out. And I've always been curious, what about doing fiction and doing a novel felt important to you after having built out, carved out this space for yourself as an essayist?
Well, I always wanted it.
Okay.
You know, yeah. It wasn't, there are things that feel like a progression because of the way time and space work.
Yeah.
I mean, it is technically yeah. chronologically, you know, when somewhere on Wikipedia/, you know, the eventual obituary, we know what came first.
Right.
But I'd always really wanted to write fiction. It's part of the reason I quit my job. And I love my job. Mm-hmm. I may be the only one of seven book publicists in the history of book publicity.
Who was way into it.
Way into it. I mean, when it's great, you can tell people what to read.
Yeah.
You can change their minds.
Yeah, that's pretty awesome.
Open their minds. And when it's going poorly, it's the worst. I knew that, you know, for essays, they end.
Right.
Frequently. You mm-hmm. can bring a thought to completion. And you can do that, I mean, logistically, on vacation. You can do it on the weekends. You can do it before work and after work. But you really have to immerse yourself in the world of the novel. I know that there are people who have jobs and write novels, which is impressive in itself. But I will say a tiny little check mark in my column is that they generally don't have publishing jobs and write novels.
Yeah.
So it's hard to, you know,
have
promote other. And
and
be outward facing, right? So you're not even an editor. You're like outward facing, constantly talking about other people's work. And it's a job that's never done. And so I quit to do this.
Yeah.
Although I will say that it's funny when people talk about the essays, I get very protective and proprietary.
You're like, I'm still an essayist.
Of course.
Yeah. No, and I think of you that way, like, but you did.
And it's not like there's one bucket that that all your work needs to fit into.
And you did this, and you did it with flying colors. It was just, why I was so particularly curious about it was because I really saw with you that doing this felt really meaningful to you, and it was this departure. And of course, because it is such a departure from what you were doing, and it's so obvious that it takes a completely different headspace and a completely different type of working. Did you, this feels like an unfair question to ask, but do you like one more than the other? Did you have more
fun? I mean, I think that the rewards of fiction are greater.
Interesting.
They really are. And it's only because it becomes a real estate issue, which is not really a creative answer. Mm-hmm. But it is really hard to write a novel.
Yeah.
Even when it's going well, even when it's really fun, you constantly have to revisit this world you made. You constantly have to pay for any mistake that you can't fake it.
Yeah. I loved your essay about body dysmorphia about your book.
Oh.
We tell this story because it's so good and it really relates to what you were saying. It was so smart.
Well, I'd written the first draft was between something like 200, 250 pages longer than it is now. And I still think of it like that. Mm-hmm. So I'll walk around being like, these huge fall tomes that's out in the fall, which is probably also why you've seen me like sending out a million Facebook posts and tweets about it because it's a competitive month.
Well, no, it's not even about that. But when I talk about like your sense of pride around it, like the way you talk about it is it's less about how often you talk about it and the way you talk about it. I feel like it's I mean it. It's like a baby, you know, type.
It
thing.
Is like a baby. Yeah.
Were there any surprises in promoting the book that you didn't see coming, having been a book publicist before? Were you like, oh, that is not what I thought this was going to be like? Or
I didn't realize it's not the comparison with book publicity versus not, but the comparison with nonfiction versus not.
Okay.
'Cause this isn't my first time with a particular promotional rodeo,
right.
But I will say that a couple of things. People have read the essays easily, I think, before the events. So a lot of people have not read the novel, which is something I knew, you know,
would happen.
Yeah. I wasn't shocked by this, you know, or upset remotely. Yeah. But it is sort of strange to have these people be so real in your head and have people not know them. It's like with you get really close to somebody, like a husband or a best friend, and you start talking to about somebody you went to high school with as if they would know them. And they're like, I've never met that person. So that's a little weird. But one amazingly comforting thing, the other thing, you know, the book promo giveth and taketh away. And one nice thing that it giveth is not the who's mad at you. How do you feel about writing about yourself? Is it so embarrassing? Like all these things that I don't find embarrassing or like are sort of not that into talking about. No one's asked me. So it's great.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. You're like, let's talk about this make-believe world I made up.
Let's talk actually about the book. And it's great to see people respond to... Because what I took from the essays was the humor and the sensibility. Mm-hmm. But it's great to see people respond to the plot and the humans.
And something you just, you know, created from scratch in a lot of ways.
Which is
weird. Life, you're like, I'm just telling it like it is. I'm just telling what happened
right.
to me.
And
I can't take responsibility
and it's my take,
exactly.
but it's not.
You might have a different one, right?
Whole, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas it's only, I mean, that's where people get... But you do recognize that it's fake and it's not the real world. Otherwise, you're liable to get some sort of like really pretentious God complex. It is a little weird when people start talking about their characters. You can tell when it's like real.
When they've gotten way too familiar with their characters.
When they've gotten way too familiar. And I'm like,
and you feel so sorry for their spouses.
Someone needs a walk. Yeah. Well, it's actually a side note maybe, but George Saunders, who I love, just published this piece in The New Yorker about Toby Wolfe being Tobias Wolfe being his mentor. And it's beautiful. Mm-hmm. But it's also like if you read it closely, Megan Daum actually was saying, she's like, if you read it closely, it's a lot about like wives who are home cooking and cleaning and dealing with these crazy personalities and like long hours away from their spouse.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, it's not just about hero worship. There's other people involved.
Yes. Yeah. Totally.
Who are behind the scenes, behind the scenes.
Way.
I have one last question. It's a total silly, dumb question. How did you come up with the names for the characters?
No.
I love that.
I'm just always curious about it. Especially with like Kezia, which is kind of an unusual name.
Yes.
And these are names
I don't know
you
a
have
Kezia.
To, I don't
if
know
if you
them
lived
either.
In New Zealand or South Africa, you might.
Interesting.
And I will tell you a couple things real quick. Okay. One, when I went to Sonoma, I was staying with a friend there and, you know, it's not an official writer's retreat, right? So he's like, oh, by the way, my brother's girlfriend is going to be here for a couple of days. And I sort of was like, well, I can't really say anything, but, you know, I've sublet my apartment, paid for this plane ticket, and I'm here for 2 weeks, and that's kind of annoying.
And I want to do some work.
And I want to do some work.
Yeah. Yeah.
She turns out to be lovely, unobtrusive, nice as hell.
Yeah.
Just and great to be there. Yeah. Mean, she was
like
great.
Like a lovely presence.
Lovely presence. Yeah. And, but she walks out of her bedroom and she's from South Africa and she says, hi, my name's Kezia. And I sort of was like frozen, stuck, like holding her hand. I'm like, I'm sorry, what did you say to me?
I have no idea.
What did you say to me?
Yeah. Oh, wait, you had already
I
come
already
up with
started
the name.
It.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. I had already started the book. Wow. And I'm like, that's really crazy. It's after. Okay, so to answer your question, her name has dual meaning.
Okay.
It's a lot of this, you know, I mentioned that the necklace, the short story, is in the book and a tenant or sort of pole of the book. And there's other little short story nuggets in there for fanatic. And Kezia is the name of a Catherine Mansfield short story that is beautiful called The Doll's House, which
amazing.
Is fantastic. And she's also, it's also biblical where it's minor biblical where when Job is given back his family and house and food or whatever by God, one of the daughters he gets back, I think it might even be the first one, is Kezia. And she's viewed as these two, as a prize, really, by the two other male characters in the book. And so that was part of that. But it really came from the short story and then worked out in my favor. Nathaniel means gift of God.
Okay. Which is
which
how,
is
he, thinks
how
of himself.
He thinks of himself.
Yeah.
That, and that was easy.
Yeah.
And then Victor is meant to be ironic. I mean, he's the last, he's
the
not a Victor.
Yeah.
No.
You know, he loses his job. He doesn't get the girl. He gets his apartment broken into. Yeah. And that's that. That's where all the names. And then the minor names were just super fun.
That feels like it'd be the fun part to do.
That was just a matter of Googling and having a blast. I mean, there's a, they went to this really sort of preppy waspy college. There's a girl named Streeter.
Yes.
There's a Venezuelan woman named Olivia Arellano.
Yes.
You know, it's fun.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Sloan, it was so excellent to have you on.
Thank you
so much for
thank
doing
you
this.
For having me.
Of and course. It's like the weather today is not really
good.
Cooperating. So thank
like
you for doing that.
I'd like to pat us all on the back.
I'd like to pat us all on the back.
Yeah. Heroes.
Yes.
You've been listening to A Few Things with Claire and Erica. We are here every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time. You should listen to us on iTunes, Stitcher, all
or
that
HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I think it's a .org.
It's a .org.
Okay.
Nailed it.
Thanks. Subscribe, leave comments, sign up for our newsletter at ofakind.com. We also post podcast recaps at ofakind.com. Click on stories and then click on listen up under top topics.
Yeah, it's a lot of direction.
It's a lot of direction. We're going to make it easier so that you don't have to actually click on steps. Yeah. But we do have people being like, what are these mysterious recaps you're talking about? They are on the website. You just have to work for them.
And since it's November, when this is all happening, you should definitely go to Of a Kind for your holiday gifting. And it's not too early to think about that. And I don't feel gross saying it.
I don't feel gross saying it at all. I think that Of a Kind products make the best gifts. And here's why. They're all limited edition. They're all exclusive. Only 30 to 50 other people in the world are going to have this thing. And everything that we send you comes with a signed certificate of authenticity. It's signed and numbered by the designer. It all feels really special. And you can tell the giftee all about the stories behind the piece because they're right there on the website when you buy them.
Boom. Thanks so much for listening. That's the show.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.